Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for taking the time. There are a few seats at the front as well. Wanted to start off by thanking the sponsors this morning's shiur, to thank Dov and Kamal Isaacs, who are sponsoring in memory of Dov's grandfather, Yitzhak Meir ben Naftali Tzvi, Mr. Tritel, whose yahrzeit is on a very illustrious day, Hey Iyar, this week, which is this week's Friday. Be'ezos Hashem, it should be al aliyas nishmasai, and he should continue to be a meretz yosha for you, the mishpacha, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren always. We also are learning today the Ilinishos Mordechai ben Yechiel Michal Halevi, thank you, and that is Paula Weinstein's father, whose yahrzeit is coming up, is going to be this coming week on Ches Iyar, God willing. He should get tremendous nachas from the children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren always. Today is a very special day. We have the opportunity of learning together. I'm really the preamble. The main show today is going to be Rabbi Ari Kahn, who is joining us. We have the opportunity of having Rabbi Kahn. Rabbi Kahn was actually in the neighborhood earlier this year, just a little bit down the street in unnamed institutions. But nonetheless, we have the great fortune of having Rabbi Kahn here for a very brief moment of this Sunday morning. And the topic as we enter into this moment, this week, of happiness, sweetness, and bitterness at the same time, is he's going to be addressing us in just a moment on the topic of the Zionism of the Vilna Gaon, which is really an incredible opportunity to delve into. And who better than a person who we all look up to, we all know in some way or another, we read, we hear, Rabbi Kahn's Shmoy Holech Lefonov. We thank both Rabbi and Mrs. Kahn for being here for the entire Mishpah for this weekend, and we have the opportunity of having you for the tail end this morning. What I thought of doing is, just before we get to that point, is just to learn a little bit on the similar topic, and that is the following. Is that actually there is a sefer, Harav Kimchi is etanol, which is just tremendous schus to be having. We had the opportunity of having Rabbi Shom Kimchi for Shabbos, and Rabbi Kimchi is an honor of Mikol Adam. He comes to hear the shirim, doesn't just give the shirim, and it's an opportunity to continue to connect. Wanted to just start off. There's a sefer written by Rav Kasher called Hatukufa Gedola, and in the sefer, anything Rav Kasher writes is really very much worthwhile reading, and he writes a lot. And in the Hatukufa Gedola, he has a section at the end. He's talking about the importance of the time of Geula. He has a section at the back called Arbat Haroim, the four shepherds. And what he does is he tracks four proto-Zionists, what we'll call it. And, you know, we don't call Zionism as a word which emerged later on, but Tzion has been something which has been in the Torah for many, many, many years beforehand. And he talks about four people, four individuals who actually plotted or tracked the course of what today became what was more the popular Aliyah as we see it. And one of them, of course, is Rav Eliyahu Vilna, which Rav Khan is going to be addressing in just a moment, which is a remarkable avenue to look into. I'd like to focus on another individual in that list that he quotes, and that is the Or HaChaim HaKadosh of Chaim Ibn Attar. And the reason this is because we're talking about the times before it was finding a deal on Dan's deals. This was long before it was just about, you know, getting the flights through Italy. We're talking about the 1700s over here. We're talking about a very, very difficult time to make Aliyah. I would like to spend just a few minutes, and I noticed that we started a little late, so I'm going to contract what I'm going to say just to enable us to be able to hear a little more from Rabbi Kahn. But just to appreciate this, the Rav Chaim Ibn Attar, there are very few people who have Pirushim on the Torah who have the appellation HaKadosh, the Holy One. And we have the Shla HaKadosh, the Al Shech HaKadosh. We also have the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Those are really the three main Pirushim that we have who have the appellation HaKadosh. There are some who argue that means to say that their Pirush is infused with Kabbalistic ideas. And certainly it is the Or HaChaim himself. Whenever you learn him on the Torah, he moves. So on the one hand, you could read one pasuk and it sounds like his Rashi, his Mefarshe Apshat. You move to another pasuk, he suddenly sounds like he is the Ramban al Derech HaEmes. He talks about all the deep Kabbalistic literature. He has everything. Everything is from the top to the bottom is in his Pirush. Remarkable Pirush. Let's just get a little bit of a sense of background to understand what was going on as he was doing this. He actually lived a very short life. He was born in the year 1696 in Morocco and ended up in Israel and was buried in Yerushalayim in 1743. So a relatively short life. Just to appreciate what's happening in Morocco at the time, we're now actually in the overflow, following into the 1500s, there's an overflow of Jews in all the surrounding Mediterranean countries from, of course, Spain, and then later on Portugal. And one of the big destinations was simply across the Mediterranean to the south, was to Morocco. And of course, there was an illustrious Jewish community there from beforehand, but there was a great overflow following the expulsion of Spanish and later on Portuguese Jews. The Moroccan Jewish community had very many ups and very many downs. And you could actually have ups and downs at the same time, depending on which area in the country you were, depending which city the Jews were living on, based on the fiefdom of the time. So depending on who the particular sheikh was in this particular area, depended on the relationship. So as an example, the father of the Or HaChaim, whose name was Rav Moshe Ibn Attar, was one of the well-connected individuals to the actual governor of this particular area, where he was born in Sali. And this governor trusted the Jews, and he liked the Jews, and therefore families like the Ibn Attar and the Toledanos, the many illustrious families were very much as part of, protected by the king. The Jewish bourgeois was protected, and they were successful. But following the death of that particular sultan, that particular sheikh, then what happened was in the wake of that, it was a more of a shaky time. There was a terrible famine. Morocco was plagued with famines through this period of time. During the famine, what happens when there's an economic downturn? Who gets blamed? Naturally, the Jews. And not only are they blamed, but they're wealthy. They've been putting away for their retirements. They have houses which they invested in. Their neighborhoods look better than the regular neighborhoods. And therefore, there was plundering and there was excessive taxation. And it's into this particular time where Or HaChaim HaKadosh is living, coming from a time of plenty into a time of famine, into a time of difficulty. In fact, if you read the introduction to Or HaChaim HaKadosh, he says himself, and this is his own words about as he's publishing this, he says the following, just to quote how he sees it himself. He says, "V'chein hikifani she'or she'ba isra v'chomitz es eretz Mitzrayim." He talks about how he's been surrounded by troubles, and he says the following. He says, "Biyad sar tsar achzari." There was a terrible king or terrible prince at the time. "Kushezeno fell zekam." One fell, another rose. There was no time to rest in his life, he says. I lived among a sea of difficulty. I was taken, I was persecuted for money. And there was accusations of a capital level. He talks about how he runs from the fire. At the time, there's documentations of Jews being burnt in Morocco, so specifically leaders. He manages to leave Morocco. He leaves, actually, it sounds like in the late 1720s, and he makes his way with a destination set on Israel. He wants to arrive in Israel, but it's not so simple. He first stops off in Algiers, which is a very prominent Jewish community at the time. We don't know today about the Jews, the Maghreb, the Jews of the Arab world. In the 1500s, more than 51% of the Jews were living under Islam, the rule of Islam, much safer than the Christians at this point in time. And he makes his way to Algiers, and he actually gets an Haskam. He shows his document, which is going to later be the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. He shows it to two of the Rabbonim there who write the Haskam. So we have the Haskam in the original printing. And we know the year that they're printing it. We see that, and they talk about this chacham, this mufla, this. As he enters into the city, he then moves on to Livorno. Livorno is one of the capitals in Italy. It is now not only there are yeshivas, in fact, where the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo himself, was educated prior, but also there's great printing houses there. And he befriends and he spends 2.5 years in Livorno making friends in the city. And the people recognize the greatness of this young individual. So much so that they actually back him in his project, which is ultimately to arrive in the land of Israel. He wants to get to the land of Israel. And what he does is he has a vision to create a yeshiva called Knesset Israel in Yerushalayim. That is his goal, but it costs a lot of money. And in fact, he talks about the amount of money that it costs, and we can do the exchange rate. We can work backwards inflation to work out it's a lot of money per person. He wants to bring a group, and that's what he does. He moves from Livorno, moving to the land of Israel at this point in time under the Ottoman rule. At this point in time, because the Ottoman Empire encompasses the entire area, all the way from what we have Turkey today, all the way down to Egypt, it actually travels much easier under the Muslims. And we have the documentation of his journeys. It's remarkable to see. We have letters from his students. We have letters from himself as the Or HaChaim makes these travels. And one thing, just brief thing I'd like to do is just to examine the Or HaChaim's own notes, his own notes in the Torah as they compare to his travels. And that is two brief examples. One is on the first source. If you have the sheets, great. If not, no, we're not going to focus too much on them. He says, he says, when you come to the land, Hashem is going to give you and you'll inherit it. This is the beginning of Parshas Kisavoy. He writes almost autobiographically, says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. Vayaki Sovala Oretz Amar Vahaya Lashon Simcha. Whenever you see the Torah saying the word Vahaya, and it will be, it is a description of happiness. La'ir She'en Lismoach Ela B'Yishivas Oretz Alderech Amrei Azimorai Schaik Pinu. Says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, there is only one simcha, and the one simcha is arriving in the land of Israel. And where does he draw it from? He draws it from Tehillim Kuf Chav Vav, which we learned yesterday at Shalosh Sudos Rav Kimchi. There'll be this laughter in our mouths as we arrive in Israel. Remember, he's writing this before he gets there. This is his destination. This is his dream. He doesn't manage to spend too much time in Israel, in fact. This is one example. And we have the diaries of his students as he arrives. He arrives first in the port of Akko. And talks about we actually have the actual notes of his students and the specific dates in Adar, in the year, V'yitain Loi. Okay, so V'yitain Loi, I believe, is the year. Let's just do the quick cheshbon. I did it before, and I think I wrote it somewhere else. V'yitain Loi, I have it on a different piece of paper over here, is that, the Haskamas were in the year 1739, so I believe we're talking about the year 1740, if I'm not mistaken, where he's arriving in Akko, and it talks about how he does a sivuv, and he starts going around and finding the graves around in the Galil. And Kabbalistically speaking, we know that the Mashiach is going to come from the Galil. It's a place which has a lot of segula, a lot of kedusha. And we actually have the documentations as he arrives in Tzvat. What's remarkable is as he arrives in Tzvat, he talks about he goes into Rav Yosef Karo's shul, and he describes how he finds the courtyard of Rav Yosef Abanai and his grave, and he davens there. And then he talks about how he was taken by one elderly individual, and he was greeted with royalty, and he's taken to go to the mikvah of the Arizal. And he says that there's four natural springs feeding this. It's a house on the side of a mountain. We see it today. And he says it's very cold. Still is. Still is. And in fact, he says, one of the Talmidim notes, that the Ari HaKadosh actually had his Tara done. When the Ari Azal passed away, the Tara of the Arizal was done in the same mikvah as well. Remarkable thing. And he talks about how he goes and he visits Meiron. And what he does in Meiron, he talks about how he goes to Tiverin and he meets the great sage, Rav Chaim Abulafia. And this is the relationship they have. They spend 9 days together. And Rav Chaim Abulafia writing the Akdamas, writing for the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. A young man walking in. Remarkable description. He sets up a yeshiva in Akko. And one of the questions is, why did he spend? He spent a few years in Akko. Why did he stop in Akko? His destination was Yerushalayim. And there's a lot of arguments, both backwards and forwards. And one of the arguments is, at this point in time, there's also a sheikh who's in charge of the Galil. And this person was actually very good. Up till now, there was anarchy. It was very hard to travel on the roads. And this particular sheikh, Sheikh Tachar, they call him, at this point in time, allowed travel. He instituted police forces so that it was actually safe to travel on the roads. It became a safe haven. It is likely that Rav Chaim Abulafia also said to the Rav Chaim HaKadosh, this is a safer place to be than Yerushalayim right now. Let's make the yeshiva here. And that's what he does. He starts off the yeshiva in Akko, and then he moves down to Yerushalayim. In fact, the Orach Chaim in his own Pirush in the Torah says, based on the Pasuk, I'm not going to read it inside, but just to appreciate what's going on in his own life over here. Source 4 on the next page, he says, Tzav Yis Aram Yis Benov Leimor, this is the beginning of Parashat Tzav, he says, Zos Torasa Oela Hi Oela Ala Mokdal Mizbeach Kol Alayla Ada Boi Keve Eish HaMizbeach Tu Kad Boi. He says, this is the description of the Oela, of the burnt offering, which is, the Oela is burnt on the Mizbeach all night until the morning, and the Eish HaMizbeach Tu Kad Boi. He says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, maybe this is not referring to the animal and the altar, it's not referring to the Mishkan, and yesteryear, it's referring to right now. This is maybe a description of Jewish history, and he talks about how there's a night, and there's a night, and through that night there's a fire burning, and that fire burning is a fire of two distinctions. Distinction number one is the fire which burns us through Golus, as we suffer through the darkness of that night. And at the same time, there's another fire which is going, and that's the fire of Torah, which allows us to continue burning throughout that darkness. He says, and how do I know how long it is? How does it work? He says, well, the world is mapped up as the Gemara tells us, into 7,000 years, each one being a day. 1,000 years is each day of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's going on? How do we understand that? So that means to say that a day of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is 1,000 years. If that's true, we can actually map out how it looks like. Let's try to appreciate this for a moment. That means to say that we are essentially, if we know that we're in 5779 right now, which means to say we are on the sixth of the millennia, the sixth of the days of creation. We're moving towards the Shabbos, which we can bring early, folks, if we try. Right? We can bring Shabbos early, but we're really towards the end of Shabbos. We're on Erev Shabbos afternoon right now, 5779, if we think about that. Says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, when is Geula going to start sprouting? He says, well, it's going to be in the sixth of the millennia, but remember, in every day there's a night and a day. Oh, we go. So we're going to get to, and Rav Kahn's going to address in just a moment the Vilna Gaon's perspective on this and the mapping out of the parasha, it's a remarkable thing. But what the Orach Chaim says is just himself. He says on his own thing, he says the last millennia you can divide into two because there's night and day, which means if a day is 1,000 years, therefore night is 500 years, right? So he says, as the night ends and the dawn of the sixth day, that's this Friday morning, is sprouting, that's when we know that the Gaon is going to be working out. Now, he says, it's been a very long night, Godless. The Eisham is back to Kaboy. It's been a long night of that fire burning. Let's work out the years quickly. When is that year? When is the year 5500? When does that year map out? That's 279 years ago. Which year is that?
1740.
17. This is the year, actually. So this is the year 1740. I think it's 1730, if I'm not mistaken. 1740 is the year. So you're right, it's on the 40s. I apologize. The change of century is on the 40s. It happens to be that Orach Chaim HaKadosh is arriving in Israel right at that time. Orach Chaim HaKadosh arrives right at that time in Israel. He sets up the yeshiva in Yerushalayim in 1742. He dies in the year 1743. That means to say he had 1 year. 1 year to live his dream. Rabbi Kimchi talked to him yesterday about dreams. He dreamed his whole year and he lived 1 year in his dream when he was able to do this. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh clearly believed. He wasn't just talking. The Orach Chaim understood when he was reading the Torah that what he was talking about in his Orach Chaim, which he published before he got to the land of Israel, was in fact what he was supposed to be doing, and that's what he did. And he ultimately arrived in Israel, and he talks about how he arrives in Yerushalayim. We have his letters from Yerushalayim. We have the last letter the Orach Chaim HaKadosh wrote. And he said, we struggled to find a place in Yerushalayim because it was dangerous. There were people who didn't like Jews so much. And we found this hidden courtyard of this person, Rabbi Abnuel, who allowed us to make yeshiva. It was a little small, he says, for the amount of people. It brought 30 people to learn there. He says, but nonetheless, we were able to do that. And he talks about the Simchas Torah in Yerushalayim, the first Simchas Torah, as he starts rebuilding this yeshiva. A remarkable description as he sends letters for funds to Livorno to be able to support each individual in his yeshiva. It should be noted, that we had a chance, for those who were here on Shavuos, on the Shavuos night, at around 4:30 in the morning when we were learning about, no, it was about 3:30 in the morning, we were learning about the Orach Chaim. We had 17 minutes on the Orach Chaim. Remember, we were going through each individual. We learned a little bit about those who loved Zion. And the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, when we learned about him, if you go today to Yerushalayim and you go down into Har HaZeisim, about halfway up on the left side is where you can find the kever of the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. He ended up, he lives there, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. And there are remarkable stories in the Second World War, who was davening at the kever of Orach Chaim HaKadosh as Rommel was moving upwards in his desert campaign. We have remarkable stories about the Orach Chaim HaKadosh when the Jordanians took over Har HaZeisim and were plowing through to make the Intercontinental Hotel, and of course while the world stood back looking the other direction. And as the Jordanians plowed through to make a road and they could not get through the area of the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. And in fact, after the shiur I gave on Shavuos night, a woman came up to me and she said, we did not have children for 10 years. And somebody said, you should go to daven by the kever of the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. She said she davened there within a month. She was pregnant. I taught her daughter. Just to appreciate, the Orach Chaim is tremendous, tremendous hashpa. Still today, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, when we learn him, we should understand that we're not just learning a pirush in the Torah, we're learning a dream which he lived. And he was one of the people who he said when he arrived in Yerushalayim, he says, nobody in Yerushalayim expected a person like me to arrive. And he says, kamoni v'chului, which means to say, me, etc. He wasn't willing to describe himself, he says, but people told me, I could not expect that there was going to be somebody like this who was going to arrive on the shores of Israel. And he became the trendsetter, one of the tremendous trendsetters to be able to shape and change what Yerushalayim would look like, what the Yishuv HaChadash would look like. And we owe it to him to appreciate what we have today, one of the tremendous greats of the last generation. So the next time we're in Israel, obviously one has to choose a safe time and have an escort when one goes to Har HaZeisim, depending on which time one's going. But nonetheless, the opportunity to be able to thank to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Kever Orach Chaim HaKadosh. Without much further ado, we have a tremendous, tremendous chus this morning to be able to hear, to learn from Rav Ari Kahn. Without much further ado, please, Rav Ari Kahn. There are makoras circulating around the room, or if you do not have one, it says 360 from Mizrahi.
If someone could find more coffee, mine seem to. It happens with scotch also. I don't know. It's somewhat miraculous. So, Rishut, the Rabbanim, Yedidi. This was going to be, I knew, a difficult talk, once I saw what the introduction was going to be. Because then I knew that he's going to go, like, is it going to be 10%, 20%, or 50% into what I want to talk about? And I tried to stop him at some point, but you know what rabbis are like, and it was difficult.
Want milk?
Yes, please. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so first of all, I have a book over here, which is called The Gaon of Vilna and His Messianic Vision. First I got the book because we shared a publisher, and I saw it on the shelf, and I said, I'll review that for you. And by the way, rabbis aren't so smart either, because the amount of time it took me to read and write the review, I could have bought the book, you know? It's like, but you know, Jews. And now I had to read the book. So it took far more of my time than, but anyway. And it's a little misleading because the whole introduction speaks about other people that came. And I want to give a little bit of background about the Gra and Vilna Gaon. Those of you who are going to be a little confused because I'll keep going back. There was a man named Rabbi Eliyahu. Some people think his family name was Kramer. It wasn't. Okay, just stop that right there. His grandfather was Kramer because a Kramer is a man who owns a little grocery store. And he didn't, but his grandfather did. So his grandfather was Kramer, but he wasn't. He was never referred to Kramer in his lifetime. But today, people will refer to him as Kramer because they think they discovered something. Eliyahu ben Shlomo from Vilna. He was born in 1720. He died in 1797. And you know what? We don't want to rate people, you know, and say this person's more influential than that person. Recently, one of these, your local newspapers, or I don't know where he publishes these things, he asks a bunch of rabbis, who you think was the most influential? So I said the most influential rabbi I thought was the Vilna Gaon. And you know today that there's a fight about who Rabbi Soloveitchik was? I was privileged to study with Rabbi Soloveitchik, but for a lot of people, he was something else. He was a philosopher, he was a Talmud teacher, he was a posek, or he was somebody who was extremely left-wing, extremely right-wing, extremely centralist, extremely something, whoever. I mean, all of us seem to recreate the Rav in our image. But if you go back and look at the Vilna Gaon, you'll find the exact same thing. Within a century after he died, and some of it's even within his lifetime, everyone was trying to take a little bit of the Vilna Gaon because the Vilna Gaon was understood to be so special. I don't want to only speak about biography. I need to go a little bit further. But the Vilna Gaon mastered every single aspect of human knowledge other than pharmacology. Because his father said, if you know pharmacology, then you'll be obligated to work as a doctor and you have to spend all your time taking patients. And it's going to cut into your time of learning. So he learned all other knowledge other than pharmacology. The Vilna Gaon, and I'm going to limit myself now to things that we know directly from his students, people that knew him. Which means if somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, it's not going to be as impressive, but we'll give you a little bit of that. But someone who knew him, a man named Rav Chaim Volozhin, the man who opens up the yeshiva of Volozhin, Rav Chaim Volozhin was learning an obscure book. The book was called Sefer Yetzirah. According to some beliefs, if you know how to read the Sefer Yetzirah properly, you can actually make a golem. But it was published, according to tradition, deliberately with mistakes, which will stop most of you from trying to create golems. That and the words, by the way. So Rav Chaim Volozhin got stuck in reading it, and he goes over to Vilna Gaon, and he asks him, what's the word supposed to be over here? And he tells him. And it happens a second time. And he says, what's this word supposed to be? And he tells him. And he says to him, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you would be able to make a golem. To which the Vilna Gaon answers, been there, done that. One second. It's more interesting than you think. He says, I started to make one, and then I got a sign from heaven that I was supposed to stop, and I realized it was because of my age. And he said, how old were you? He said, it was before his bar mitzvah. You know, there is certain people in the arts who were geniuses as children. Mozart. I got the right one? If I didn't, that'd be in big trouble the whole way home. I'd hear about this. And it's a long flight. The Vilna Gaon was Mozart, but far more talented. Because all human knowledge he knew. He didn't just know Tanakh. You know what? A lot of you know Ashrei by heart, correct? Poteach et yadecha, what's the next word? What's the word before poteach? Exactly. The Vilna Gaon knew it backwards and forwards. And not only did he know backwards and forwards, he knew the numerical value of it. He was able to see every single pasuk in the Torah and all of Torah Shabbat Peh as it emerged out of it. His knowledge was so profound. But now I want to stop and go back to this thing about him, the age of 13. Rav Chaim Volozhin tells us he mastered all Jewish knowledge, all of Tanakh, all of the Mishnah, all of the Gemara, all of the writings of the Arizal, all of the Zohar, before the age of 13. By the age of 20, he was called upon to settle big arguments within the Jewish community because everyone knew exactly who he was. The Vilna Gaon, some of us know, had arguments with the Hasidim. Did you know that he wrote more about Kabbalistic ideas than any other contemporary Hasidic master? Did you know that he wrote more than all contemporary Hasidic masters combined? Okay, one second. A lot of us don't necessarily think of him as being this Kabbalistic person because he's so influential in other areas. But that's why I said, who is the Vilna Gaon? So from Chaim Volozhin, even though he was interested in the Kabbalistic ideas, he opens up the yeshiva, the famed Volozhin yeshiva, and the influence of that yeshiva we feel till today. Chaim Volozhin, by the way, had a student who you may not have ever heard of, which would have made him very happy, Rav Yosef Zundel from Salant. Salant you heard of, but Rav Yosef Zundel you're not sure of, right? Rav Yosef Zundel was this mysterious person who saw himself as being absolutely exclusively a student of the Vilna Gaon, who lived his life according to the Vilna Gaon. He had a student who you heard of, and that's Rav Yisrael Salanter. And all the yeshivas and all the impact of Yisrael Salanter comes from Rav Zundel of Salant, comes from the Vilna Gaon. By the way, we just now covered just about every single yeshiva. Or at least every Ashkenazi yeshiva. We just now, okay, not Hasidim. If you continue, there was another aspect of the Vilna Gaon, and that was his student who he sent to Eretz Yisrael. He told him, go, you need to go. Most of the ones who went were his relatives. They went. And that's really the story that I want to talk about today. But first, we're going to read a source. Just to get a little bit of a feeling, we'll read one and two quickly. Number one is a comment to the Gra to an obscure part of the Zohar called the Sifra Ditzinusa. You can find this as a separate volume. If you don't understand anything in the volume, it's worth it for Rav Chaim Volozhin's introduction to it, because that's where he tells all of the stories of the Vilna Gaon in terms of his Kabbalistic lineage or impact. If you understand the Torah properly, you'll understand everything. Details you'll understand. The Vilna Gaon thinks if you understand Torah properly, you will have all knowledge. Only somebody who has all knowledge can make a statement like this. Source number two, I probably should not share with you, but it's what we're going to talk about today. This is where we get into trouble. It's from the same book, same chapter, Vida, and No. Shekol elu hayamim hin remez l'sheshet alafim shana shehim shesh yamim. Skip a little bit. Come on, shekatav shita alfin shanin talim b'shata kadmai. The 6,000 years, the duration of the universe, are connected to the 6 original days of creation. V'kol ha'pratin shehim b'vav yamim elu, and all details about the 6 days, hin minagim b'shesh alafim kol echad b'yomo v'shato. That the 6 days of creation are a microcosm for everything that's going to happen afterwards. And then he writes, and this is the sentence which hopefully will shock you. Umikan, and if you understood what I just now said, teda ketsa ga'ula, you'll know exactly when Mashiach will come. Shehu be'ita, if it happens in its proper time, chas v'shalom, because he's hoping it will happen earlier. Kishelo yizaka'in, if we don't have the merit. Shehu ketsa achron, and that's going to be the end of days. And I make the reader of these lines swear by the God of Israel not to reveal it. So, I'm not going to reveal what he doesn't want us to reveal, but I'll at least show you what he was talking about. Is that okay, or you want me to stop now? Keep going. What? We can keep the secret, okay. If nothing else, that sentence, it's an extraordinary sentence. And it's said by somebody who now you already see, somebody who sees all kinds of things. Now, what he saw, and what Rabbi Trump had spoken about in the introduction, was something which was spelled out by other people before. One name that I'll give you was Rav Emanuel Chai Ritchie, which is also somebody who you don't necessarily know. He spells out this very clearly. He was from Italy. He was born in 1688, and he also moved to Israel, and he also died in 1743. It's the same time frame. The Ramchal, also from Italy, it's same time frame, came to Israel. He died in 1746. All three of those rabbis came, and they were aiming for that 1740. Because they knew that 1740 was a time, they knew that it was something important, they knew that something was significant. And I'm going to spell out what the Vilna Gaon was talking about now, and what the others were talking about, and why they were aiming for it. And if you look at page number 3, I broke it out for you as easy as possible, but don't go so quick. Let's go to the bottom of page 2 first. Amar Rabbi Yochanan v'Rabbi Chanina, source number 10, Gemara in Sanhedrin, Shteim Esrei Sha'ot Havi Hayom. The first day of Adam had 12 hours. Sharishona Hutzbar Afro. In the first hour, the dust was gathered. Shnia Nase Golam Shlishit Nimtuchu Evarav Revit Nizraka Bo Nishama Chamishit Amad Al Raglav Shishit Karelu Shemot. You like how I'm not translating? Shviit Nizdavagot Lo Chava Shminit Alula Mita Shnaim V'Yordu Arba'a Shiit Nizdavash Lo Laolach Almini Ilan Asirit Sarach Achadasur Nidon Shnei Mesurin Etrad V'Halach Lo Shenemar V'Adam Biker Bar Bal Yalin. So go back to what Rabbi Trump said earlier. The Vilna Gaon understood that the 6,000 years are connected to the 6 days. Okay, that was the easy part. As he also pointed out, it was evening, it was morning, so first there's night, then there's day, which means if you go through the 6,000 years, we are up to today 5,700 and change. 5,500, if now you look on page 3, was the year 1740. That was the first hour that the Gemara was referring to. That was when we start counting. The end of the first hour, which is 1781, Adam's dust was gathered. Between 1740 and 1781 is when these Kabbalists believed that something special can or should or perhaps could happen. All of those who aimed for 1740, because they knew that that's the beginning of the sixth day, and again, the beginning of the day is the evening, morning, each 1,000 years, divided in half is 500 years. You take the 500 and divide it by 12, which gives you each hour. Each hour, therefore, that's your math, is 41.66666. And therefore, the first year was 1740. It may interest you to know that the Baal Shem Tov also attempted to come to Eretz Yisrael in 1740, and he stopped. The Vilna Gaon attempted to come to Eretz Yisrael in 1778 in order to get there by 1781, because that's the time of the gathering, and that's the time that we need to be there. So the Vilna Gaon stopped, turned around, and went home. Depending which student of the Vilna Gaon you're talking to, the halachic students are going to say, oh, because he was worried about keeping Trumot and Maestrot and Shemitah and so on, and that's why he went back. The Kabbalistic ones will tell you a completely different story. Now, the reason why we have a little bit advantage with the Kabbalistic ones is because he actually told them why he stopped, and he asked them to continue. I'm going to say something which may sound a little arrogant of the Vilna Gaon, but he's not the first and he's not the only one, because the Arizal said the same thing. The Arizal believed that he had the possibility of being Mashiach ben Yosef. Now, right away, you should stop me and say, who's Mashiach ben Yosef? We know about Mashiach ben David. The Gemara speaks about Mashiach ben David many times. It mentions Mashiach ben Yosef only one time. It's the Gemara in Sukkah, which we happen, I think, coincidentally, or not, have it over here on page number 3. It talks about a mourning that's going to take place, mourning, M-O-U-R-N, a mourning that will take place, or even a eulogy. And what is going to be that mourning, the Gemara says, Pligaber of Yosef and Dosef Rabbanan, Chanamara of Mashiach ben Yosef Shenerag. One says the mourning will take place because Mashiach ben Yosef was killed. Now let's stop. That's the only mention of Mashiach ben Yosef that the Gemara tells us that there's going to be a mourning that's going to take place and everyone's going to be despondent because Mashiach ben Yosef will be killed, died. And that's also interesting, all these various people who died. Rav Emanuel Ritchie was murdered. He moved to Israel, went back to Italy to collect money for the community back in Israel and was murdered by robbers along the way. When the Arizal died, his students believed that he was Mashiach ben Yosef who died, and this will go for each and every one of them. The Vilna Gaon imagined that he was Mashiach ben Yosef also. He gave his relatives a present before they left. I only have, and this is my copy, a book which was also published by Rav Kasher, which is called The Kol HaTor. I have an updated copy of The Kol HaTor, which was published by somebody who I know. His name is Yosef Rivlin. He's a professor in Bar-Ilan University. And this is his family's legacy. It's called Kol HaTor V'hushita Tagon Rabbi Eliyahu Mivilna V'giluyo V'al Tkufat Hetchaltu D'Geula Me'oroto U'mitzvoteha. All the things that will happen in the beginning of the redemption, Me'hagon HaMakulba Rav Hillel and Rabbi Binyamin Rivlin Mishklov Talmidei HaGra. The Gra told his relatives, I can't go. And again, this was, I don't want this to sound so strange. He said, whoever goes to build Yerushalayim, and by the way, any of you who own apartments in Yerushalayim is part of this. Anybody who builds Yerushalayim has a spark, an aspect of Mashiach ben Yosef in their souls. Because Mashiach ben Yosef, his job is to build Yerushalayim. And now I have to go back and explain a little bit more, a little bit background to that hopefully we can all understand. It goes back to Bereshit. You have, in the end, last third of Bereshit, you have a fight which is taking place, a struggle which is taking place. Who's going to be the primary or the dominant child of Yaakov? You know, we look at, okay, who's going to be the Bechor? Because that's what all of Bereshit was about. But this is something else. Who's going to win? And then you see Yehuda emerging on one side, and you see Yosef emerging on the other side, and you think it's about Bereshit, but it's not. Because those two are going to represent Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David, meaning Yehuda, David, and so on. Those are two different lines. You look the battle of Amalek. Who's the one who's fighting Yoshua? Who did Yoshua come from? From Ephraim, from Yosef. He's the one who does a lot of the heavy lifting. The main part of the Vilna Gaon's teaching that he gave his relatives, and by the way, the current president of Israel is a descendant of this Rivlin family. I discussed this with him. He gave the Rivlin family a present and he said, this is what's going to happen. This is what you need to do. You need to go to Yerushalayim. You need to build Yerushalayim. Because Yosef and Yerushalayim are connected. By the way, that's a Midrash Tanchuma. It says that Yosef in Gematria is Tzion. It's 156. And they said that everything about them are the same. They're beautiful. People are jealous of them. By the way, the word jealousy, kin'ah, is also 156, which is Yosef, and which is Tzion. The job of Yosef is to build up Tzion. The job of Yosef is to do the heavy lifting. And he said, go to Yerushalayim, build Yerushalayim, because that's going to be the beginning of the redemption. That was the message, that was the mandate that he gave them. He also said another thing, because they said, isn't it a little dangerous to go to the Middle East? And the Vilna Gaon said to them, those of you who go will survive. Those who stay in Vilna won't. He goes, go, go. That's where the salvation is going to take place. And I'm going to say it again. A man who claimed that he sees everything spelled out in front of him, because every single detail is written down. Take a look at our list of dates again now. 1740 is the beginning. That's the beginning of Adam's existence. God is gathering things together. That's why all those rabbis decided to gather together and to go back to the land of Israel. 1781 was the next date. Sorry, 17. That's when Adam was gathered. They wanted to get there by 1780. They thought they can bring the Messianic Age. 1823 was the next hour. We'll skip 1840 for a second. 1840, by the way, is another passage in the Zohar where it says that that's when there will be clarity. That's where wisdom, the upper wisdom, will come down to the world. That, incidentally, is the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. A lot of people saw 1840 as a messianic possible date, and there's an incredible danger in predicting these things. 1864 was the next hour when the libs were shaped. 1906, a soul was infused. 1948 is when Adam stood up on his feet. So any of you that think that 1948 perhaps had some significance, so this was exactly what the Vilna Gaon was saying and pointing, and the others as well. Of course, they knew that this was a day which had significance. The next one was 1990. 1990, by the way, if you just check, you wonder, okay, what happened in 1990? He gave animals their names. There was clarity in 1990. 1990 is the fall of communism. Countries were changing their identity. The next date of significance, and we sure live and be well till that date, but as it gets closer, you'll have a whole bunch of people saying, oh, this is a special date, and that's 2031, and that's when Eve becomes his mate. And that's obviously going to be a time of incredible amount of tikkun, but we'll stop over here. Because the Vilna Gaon said this is only if things don't work out. We can still make it happen earlier, and that's exactly what he was trying to do. He didn't want to go down that path of sin and punishment and so on. He wanted things to happen properly beforehand. So in order to understand the Vilna Gaon properly and his concept of Zionism and redemption, the first thing about Zionism is you have to go to Israel. He himself wanted to go. Oh, here was what I started to say before. He imagined that he himself was the soul of Yosef, and therefore he imagined that he has to go and be part of Mashiach ben Yosef, perhaps even, and go back build Israel. And he felt he was stopped from going, and he told his students at that point, I realize that I am not the soul of Yosef. I can't go. Just like he said when he wanted to build the golem before he was 13 years old, he got a sign from heaven that he couldn't do it. He said, I got a sign from heaven that I can cross over. And then I came to this realization, this very sad realization, he tells his students, that I'm not the soul of Yosef, I'm the soul of Moshe, and my job is to teach Torah to the Jewish people. And just like Moshe can never cross into Israel, I have to remain outside, but I'm sending my students across, and you have to go in. You're going to be Yoshua. You're going to build this. You're going to build Yerushalayim. You're going to spread the walls of Yerushalayim. You're going to build a new city of Yerushalayim. And that's what the Riven family did, and that's what the Solomon family did. And these are the descendants of the Vilna Gaon. He gave them this mandate, and he said, this is where salvation will come from. You need to build Yerushalayim, but I'm going to stay behind. But the main thing that you need to understand, and I've read this entire book more than once that I told you about from Rabbi Rivlin, the Kol HaTorah, the whole book is about Yosef. The whole book is about Yosef, the spiritual dynamics of Yosef, the spiritual identity of Yosef. That's what the whole book is about. And therefore, to understand who Yosef is on a spiritual level will explain what I'm about to say, but without understanding who Yosef is, it will sound... You know, perhaps even some of you will think like playing Monday morning quarterback. So let's try this again. Those of you who are counting Sfira and going into the Gevura, Shebi Yisod, or such things, yes, you know what you're saying when you say those things, or it's just written in the Siddur? Okay. There's actually a system to this, and the system is connected to all of this. Of all of Yaakov's children, only one of them becomes connected to one of the Sfirot. Avraham... Gvura, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Okay, we're going to have to make this clearer, and you'll have a chart on the bottom afterwards. The top three are, we only count the bottom seven, but there are 10 Sfirot. I'm sorry for getting the worlds of Sfirot, and I hope you can read some of the words. You have Chesed, Gvura, right and left, Avram and Yitzchak, in the middle of Yaf Teferet. Avram is Chesed, Yitzchak is the antithesis, Yaakov is the synthesis. Right, left, center. Made sense? Maybe. Maybe not. After that, you have underneath that Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. Again, right, left, center. Maybe some of you, when you are welcoming your Ushpizin on Sukkos, are confused. Of course, we get to Moshe, Aaron, and then Yosef. Right? First of all, Yosef is the only one of the sons of Yaakov who are a part of this thing. Why Yosef? Because Yosef is considered to be Evan Yisrael. He's an Av and he's a Ben. Yosef is the fourth wheel of the Merkava. Yosef, it's Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef. Yosef lives as a Bechor. He lives as the older brother, because what is the role of the older brother? To take care of all the others. Who was the one who took care of all of his brothers for so many years? That was Yosef. Yosef ends up becoming like one of the Avot. He's the only one of the children of Yaakov who dies in Bereshit. Bereshit is the book of the Avot. Yosef dies in Bereshit. Don't worry, he dies again in Shemot. I guess the brothers hated him that much. Yosef dies twice. But Yosef is both an Av and a Ben. He's one of the 12 tribes, but he's not one of the 12 tribes because his children are the 12 tribes. He's like Yaakov 2.0, right? He's something else. But if you understand that, you'll understand why he's on this list. But there's another thing that I hope you understand again. Gvura Chesed, Avram Yitzchak, Yaakov in the middle. Moshe Aaron, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Yosef in the middle. And what's under that? Malchut is David. Now, it could be that you've seen this kind of chart and you've never understood it. But the Vilna Gaon understood that who is the key point over here? It's the Yesod. Because what is the Yesod? The Yesod is the foundation. Where does the Yesod sit? It sits someplace between Yaakov and David. Which means, who is the one who gathers all the power of the Avot? Well, it's Avraham and Yitzchak becomes this, the center. The synthesis is Yaakov, and that gets passed on to Yosef. Ela told it, Yaakov, Yosef. Yosef is the one who has the spiritual power of the Avot. I'll say it again. Maybe it'll make sense the next time. Yosef is the one who has the spiritual power of the Avot. And therefore, he's in the middle. He's the Yesod. Tferet Yesod. Tferet Yesod. Right? I'll keep on saying that. Tferet Yesod. Afterwards, you have Moshe and Aaron, right? And then Yosef is their Yesod. He's the one who's the center. The center. Just keep in mind on the center. And then on the very bottom is Malchut. What is Malchut? Malchut is David. Okay. You have on your last page an essay from a book. Which were the drashot of one of the Rivlin family. I was told about this book. It's called Midrash Shlomo. I was told about this book by this fellow, Yosef Rivlin. Svirat HaOmer V'yom Matan Torah Kedushat Yerushalayim. Anosei Zed Darash Bal Kol Yeshua of Yosef HaSofer Rivlin. B'Yerushalayim Bishnat Tuf Resh Kaf Vav. What year is that? 1866. 1866, he gave this drasha. And when you have time, you'll read the whole thing. He talks about the idea of the Omer. The Omer is we climb from step to step to step. In Egypt, we sunk to the 49th level of Tumah. We have to fix each one of these days. And each one of these days are the 49 days of the 7 times 7. The first week is going to be the week of Chesed, and you'll have Chesed of Chesed, and you'll have Gvur of Chesed, and you'll have... Right, continue along the way to Ferit of Chesed, Netzach and Hod and Yesod and Malchut of Chesed, and start the next week, which is Gevura and Chesed of Gevura and Gevura of Gevura, and so on. All 49 days will need to be fixed because we're climbing for the 49th level of Tumah of impurity, going all the way up to the point that we could have Matan Torah. Now I'm going to say it again. According to the Vilna Gaon, who is the key? The Yesod. Who is the key? Who's Yosef? Why is Yosef so important? Well, if you even looked at the map, you'll realize that Yosef connects to the Avot, but he connects to David. Yosef is going to be Mashiach ben Yosef, who does all the heavy lifting. What does Yeshua do? Yeshua fights against Amalek on the one hand, but what else does Yeshua do? He's the one who brings his Israel, does all the work, and then David comes dancing in, and Shlomo ben David comes and builds the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, all the heavy lifting is Yosef, Yoshua, and then Malchus Beis David comes, and the Vilna Gaon says, guys, roll up your sleeves, because you're going to have to do all the heavy lifting. You're going to go to Israel. It's going to be hard. You're going to have to go to Yerushalayim. You're going to have to go to war. You're going to have to fight. You have to do all the heavy lifting, and then at the very end, Mashiach ben David is going to come. But now, to understand what the Vilna Gaon told them, you have 49 days. And those 49 days are dangerous days, the sphere, dangerous days, because the days of holiness. And wherever there's holiness, there's a possibility of counter-holiness trying to attack holiness. Because counter-holiness hates holiness, and therefore we're very susceptible as we're climbing, and therefore we need to be careful during these 49 days. And we don't make weddings during these, at least according to whatever minhagim you have. And it's during these days that we have a little aspect of mourning because they're dangerous days, and that's what he spells out in this whole drasha. And as I said, you will read this at your leisure. We'll get towards the bottom of where it says Ayin Aleph, which is the left paragraph. Yimei Asfira Eforheim HaYamim HaMesugalim BiYoter Lehit Alut B'Kedusha. These are the days that we have the greatest capacity of climbing. These are the days that the klipot, again, this counter-holiness can attack. That anything which is more holy, anything which is holier, either in place or in time, in every aspect of holiness, is susceptible from the other side. That non-holiness has no existence. There is no such thing as non-holiness, but non-holiness is when holiness is not utilized, and then it creates non-holiness. Non-holiness is the absence of holiness where there was a potential to holiness. When you have Shabbos, which is holy, and you break Shabbos, you didn't keep Shabbos, you did something unholy because you didn't use holiness. The lack of use of holiness creates non-holiness, which is non-existence. That's what the Vilna Gaon is saying over here. Continue. Be careful during these days. Zulat shnei yamim misuyamim, except for 2 days, bimei asfira, she'ena klipa yuchola l'shlot bahem. There are only 2 days that the klipa can't touch them. V'hem yom ha'esrim ba'omer, v'yom ha'arbim b'shtayim ba'omer, ki yadu liyodechein, as those who know the mystical secrets. Shneyamim ha'eile nutonim b'shilovim shel kav harachamim. These are the 2 days in the middle of our chart. Kaf pa'omer yisod d'tiferet, membet pa'omer malchut d'yisod. So let's pause here for a second to understand what he said. If you go back to your chart, yisod d'tiferet is the link of the middle. It's when Yosef fulfills the mandate of Yaakov. Tiferet is Yaakov, Yosef is the connection. Yisod of Tiferet is the 20th day, because the first week is the week of Chesed. The second week gets us the 14 days, is the week of Gevura. The third week of Tiferet, when we get to the 6th day of that week, it's Yisod. Yes? Did that make sense to any of you? So he says, that day, nothing can touch it. Because that's the day that Yosef is now connecting. I want to read his next line over here, why that day is possible. Because that's the day the way this is written in the Kol HaTor. Because on that day, the idea of schut open is opened up. Niftach hachalon harishon shemechita rabarzel l'chibur haschut shel brit avot. He continues and he says on the 42nd day, what happens on the 42nd day according to our chart? That's malchut of Yisod. That's the day that Yosef connects to David. Now, those of you who haven't figured any of this out yet, the 20th day of the Omer is the 5th day of Iyar. It's Yom HaTzmaut. In a speech of the Vilna Gaon student in 1866, he was telling the followers, this is the secret that the Vilna Gaon gave us, that there are certain days that have power. The day that Yosef fulfills the mandate of Yaakov, that's the 5th of Iyar. That day has power. That day is when positive things happen. The other day that he was talking about, the 42nd day, I want to be careful about this. I want to go back to Yosef in the desert. If you do your math, and I'm not doing this math now, it's another shir, it's another time, for not for now. But if you go and you use all of Chazal and all the information that we have, we know that the day of the war of Amalek was actually 2 days. The first day of the war of Amalek is when Amalek attacks, and then Moshe tells Yeshua, go out, and tomorrow you're going to fight. Those 2 days are the 27th and 28th day of Iyar. How I know that, as I told you, I'd have to do, it'll take us much more time. Those 2 days happen to be the same 2 days in 1967 that Yerushalayim was liberated. Yerushalayim was liberated on the 27th and the 28th day. The other day over here, which the Vilna Gaon was talking about, which is Yesod, Malchus of Yesod, happens to be the 42nd day of the Omer. Ben Sion, you don't know this, but almost all the books that I've written, I always will make sure to finish the book either on the 20th day of the Omer, it says, or it says on the 42nd day of the Omer. And the Vilna Gaon's students write, just to finish off this paragraph that we have in front of us, that historically the Vilna Gaon students always try to use these days because of the incredible spiritual power to these days. And it says, again at the end, Bizman Tchilat Palmimim, sorry, Pu'latam HaKavira B'Yesod Yishuv Yerushalayim B'Shnat Tavkuf Ayin Bet, Oto Shana Shaba Hinichu Et Yesod Shel Beit Midrash Eliyahu Hashem Rabbeinu Agra B'Yerushalayim Re'u Beruach Kadsham Shenifetach HaChalon HaRishon B'Mechitzat HaBarzel L'Achzarat HaChibur Shel Zchut Avot Sheya Nifsak Me'Azman Churban Beit HaMikdash. Talmidei HaGra The Talmidei Talmideim Habaim Achareim Nitzlu Et Shnei Amim Eile Shel Hanachat Yesod L'Mifalei Kedusha Shonim B'Yerushalayim. That they always saw that these days were holy days to utilize the building of Yerushalayim and all kinds of other holy enterprises. So when I speak about the designers of the Vilna Gaon, I think it's far more profound than maybe some of us thought before we started. Yes, he told the students to come, but he also gave them a present. The present was absolutely Kabbalistic. The Kabbalistic message in it was, you're part of the dream of building. You're going to do the heavy lifting, and it's not going to be easy. There's going to be tears, and there's going to be bloodshed. It's going to be difficult. Some of them buried their children, buried their wives. Tragedy involved in this. But we look where we're standing now, and we say, wow, he was right. The Vilna Gaon was right. Yes, he had to stay behind for whatever his understanding was, and the yeshiva Volozhin and the other yeshiva and all those other students come. But preparations have to be done, you know. Any of you who have children who no longer live at home, before your children come home to visit, what do you need to do? You have to make preparations. The Vilna Gaon said the Shechina has to make preparations for its children to go home. He told his students, you're going to be the first one to go. You're going to be Yosef. He's the first one who goes into exile, and he's going to be the first one to come home. Go home, get the house in order, and the rest of the family can then go home. And then eventually, Mashiach ben David, because everything else is ready, has to come and complete the mission. What a privilege we have that we've seen all of this play out in front of us, and now we know we're at that last stage. One more step. Mashiach ben David should come in our times and complete all the promises and all the visions of all the prophets and that clarity that the Vilna Gaon saw 200 years ago sitting in Vilna. Thank you.
So did they find anything between 1740